This is committee of the whole meeting, July 2nd, 2012.
We will hold the order at 7:18. Roll call.
Trustee Clemens?
Present.
Trustee Newby?
Present.
Trustee Sandoval?
Yes.
Trustee Simoncelli is absent. Trustee Chopin?
Present.
Trustee Wyszynski?
Present.
And 2.1 is approval of the minutes of the committee of the whole meeting of June 18, 2012.
Second.
Trustee Sandoval, second by Chopin. Questions, comments?
Trustee Newby?
Aye.
Trustee Sandoval?
Yes.
Trustee Chopin?
Aye.
Trustee Wyszynski?
Aye.
Trustee Clemens?
Aye.
Motion carries. All the comments of the committee of the whole thing. Okay, on to Public Works, Facilities Capital Assets Engineering.
This one is sort of advertised for bids for Park Avenue Water Main Improvement. Does anybody have any questions for Kurt?
And gets into the curb gutter on 134.
Anyway, so a less expensive option would be a shallow swale, an inlet just south of Mr. McGillis's driveway, pipe from that inlet out into our land a short distance, and grading of the ground to try and get the water to fan out and dissipate. I'll come back to that in a moment. In the Iron Horse parking lot, similarly, an inlet to capture the runoff, pipe across, and again, grading to try and fan out and dissipate the water. That's what I call an option five in this and that would be in the range of about $10,000. I'll refer to that as an interim measure, nothing else, to buy some number of years of improvement until other things happen, such as Illinois 134 getting a better drainage system on the south side of the highway, potential future use of this property. So it's not necessarily a forever and ever solution, but it would definitely do some good. I have not talked to Mr. McGillis, I have not talked to the owner of Iron Horse specifically to this option. Want to get some direction from the board, and I'm happy to go visit with both of the gentlemen.
So is this option five going to eliminate all the water, or will there still be some kind of?
I'll say it should capture 80 to 90% of runoff. When I first got here, I had caught a couple of early March rain events, and then one in early May. So observations, good topographic information, and if you want to look at this afterward, the yellow highlighted line is one of the contour lines. So definitely the owner wants to go that way, but some of it, given the pitch on the alley, and it changes as it goes from south to north. Some of the water probably will still not get captured by these two inlets. Substantive improvement, but probably not a 100% solution.
Existing conditions on there around is yard inlet by the McGillis driveway.
There's
a small yard inlet by the
McGillis driveway. No, they would be our standard 2-foot diameter open flat grate.
The existing pipes.
There's an existing culvert that is only like 4-inch plastic. That has been plugged for some while, and I've not made any attempt to clean it because that's not the solution.
The outside pipe outlets near where your finger was pointing, or your proposed northerly inlet would be?
This would be on the south side of the driveway.
Right.
Capturing the water that is migrating in a northeasterly manner, ponding in the driveway and the pulling back yard.
Right. But at the proposed location of the northerly inlet is where the current outfall of the 4-inch pipe is, which exaggerates the problem. So there was a small pipe put in some years ago. Whatever functionality it has at this point makes the problem worse. A and there's also asphalt berm along the easterly edge of the portion of the alley that was put in by the village to help try to alleviate the problem. The additional drainage issue is that the parking lot for Iron Horse flows towards the building. It's not on village property. So what Ron's proposing here are some solutions that the village can do to try to alleviate most of the problem within the village owned property.
And thank you, Mayor. Since you mentioned the old, excuse me, Iron Horse parking lot, there's problems independent of the alley there. And there was another reason I'm trying to have a conversation, although I met him, they're remaining dead. And he's not at the camp for understanding that. But they should do something with their parking lot at the time if we choose to go forward with option 5 to facilitate getting all the water into an inlet. A question that has been going through my mind, if we are going to pay full freight down here, should we then also take full freight for the inlet of the pipe in the parking lot there, or should I be trying to negotiate some participation? And I don't necessarily need an answer to that. I get all the thoughts going through my mind. Should we be happy to go out with any of you? Maybe someday we'll see rain again. but at least we'll walk in the park.
You are sorry.
It's not on this one, but on the next one. On Park Road.
Okay, just a real quick question. If you do option 5 at $10,000 and it lasts 2 or 3 years, is anything that you're doing in option 5 going to be part of the cost from option 3 or 4? Or are we going to do $10,000 and it may last 2 or 3 years and then we're back to square one spending much more?
I'll say no. They're independent. The option 2, 3, and 4 were more substantive paving work and channeling the water, piping the water across 134 to the drainage structure. 4, substantively piping an open ditch to the closest inlet structure, about where my finger is, or the landscaped island by the auto repair facility. There was some concern about a open swale or that plant, its functionality and all that. So the criticality of going to option 5 is getting good regrading to fan the water out, get it to spread and dissipate.
Is that difficult to do?
I'm sorry,
is that difficult to do? You know that as a disadvantage?
Not difficult to do, just taking proper care and surveying so that, again, we get the water to spread. And none of the options are walk away and live happily ever after. All of them have some ongoing maintenance consequences.
Annual inlet maintenance with a vacuum truck would only take a couple of minutes for a structure to clean up.
Yeah.
That would be the long-term goal of Public Works.
To be able to go with the tractor,
to keep them functioning, but you would have to have some maintenance on any storm sewer that you put in there as well. So
with all of these versions,
we could, and again, I've certainly thought of that, and happy to
want some surveying assistance to get the critical function of spreading the water out to help us in grading it.
So would you have the full frame and all these options, or would we have assistance on it? I mean, I was ever like asking for the assistance.
Are you asking me, do I need technical
assistance? I'm asking you, is, okay, I want to have option four. We're paying the full frame of that, the villages, or is any of that going to be done by Steven County Cash Award?
I'm missing something, Trustee Newby.
I think what Trustee Newby...
If Dasher Woodman gives us...
Part of the problem is because it was the Dasher Woodman approval problem is down. So, my question was, is has Dasher Woodman talked to and been willing to help fix this problem?
I talked to the then village engineer, Erica Frankel. The alley paving there that's going to be came with Goodnow, the surfacing project, and it came as the opportunity without real design effort. 10+ years ago, so this problem is not a new problem, and I understand. And for us to go back to the Woodman and say, you should not have done this, I'm struggling with that.
Okay, but the problem, as the time goes on, I have messaged to them about the slant in the road, pitching toward the driveway. She's told me that that was fine, that the driveway was not pitched that way. And it definitely isn't. That's why I said part of the issue is with that one.
Yeah, 10 years ago, so, and I personally struggling to try to go back and try and get some compensation or consideration.
I think the point is that it was an alley overlay, not a regrading project. And if we had an engineered project that was substantially more costly and it created problems, then we might have something to fall back on. But it was more of a quick maintenance add-on to the other paving project.
I will tell you this, Kurt. Did walk the ground with me trying to help with exploring less expensive solutions. Mark and I walked the ground, and as part of the low cost improvement, I think as close as we're going to land to something that will do some good. Please ponder this. I'll leave this here for next little day. Again, I'm happy to walk it. I definitely believe we should try to do something. And this may be the best we can afford to do.
Were you planning to talk to Mr. McGillis or to Ironworth at some time in the near future?
I'm happy to reach out to him. But again, I wanted to at least get some sensitivity of this one. So, absolutely, didn't go not through on both boards and talk to each of them separately.
Steve, how, where would, I don't think we budgeted for this, right?
No, we didn't.
So this will come out of the general fund somewhere?
Yes.
So if you had a budget of parking, that would be able to do low cost option.
Good enough.
benefit at the low cost, yes. And the fact that there are other drainage issues off the village property besides that need to be addressed, that would be shown good faith. Us trying to pick up the key locations where the water source is coming from. And like Ron said, future projects in the area will give us more opportunities to include local projects without separate funding.
Okay, any other
planning? I have some photos and also
so what are we doing on this one? Are we doing this one, do we need it?
I want to let me walk and show me and find me what the plans are. I just see on the town.
Okay.
You want to give it out to me? Something that after reviewing you would be ready to go down a recommendation, or should we go to the next committee of the whole for further discussion?
I could be honest with you, if you want to show me in the next committee of the whole, and maybe I'll be
I've just got a few digital photos to try and set the tone for some further discussion on Park Road Park. You have previously seen the larger version of this photo, and it is our 5.5 acres of land, Park Road, in the north, south, east, west. That's right. Northern boundary of Mound Lake, water's edge, and the you've also seen the concept plan that we had asked the park district to develop an apologetic color. Does not come out as well. Archer, the alley, and then a proposal of a meandering trail or path leading to the water's edge. Some offshoot paths. Substantive opening up of the wooded area in this concept. I was asked to stake the path, the trail, being, again, this main trail. And the next several pictures to give some perspective. We had gone in and opened up near the alley about 50 feet back from the alley. And yes, it's not finished product. We should go back if nothing further is going to happen. The intention of this clearing was to have a staging area for equipment and for debris to be hauled and presumably some waste dumpsters. The next several, or the remaining several photos just taken today, showing what is the in-use trail, which Park District's consultant generally found to be an acceptable way to get from Park Road to Water's Edge. So fortunately we got help in the initial establishment. Foot stakes in turning points for visibility. They're either painted white, which also has to do with as one gets closer to the lake, the appearance, the whole width of the path, the engineering. Certainly some regrading will be needed, not a substantive issue. Some consideration will be needed for drainage, also not within a substantive issue. One of the last is drainage.
You're near the end of the struggle they have.
Yes. Considerable weed debris in places that will have to be cut up again, not anything of substantive. Kind of a gathering point for those that have been transiting through the area. I'm told that this area here would be good as a fishing recreational area because of the lake bed being fairly hard rock and tending to support fish habitation. And that's it as far as photos. A handout that tries to summarize from my perspective where we're at, and at least from a short term, things we have already talked about in some forums, and some have been acted on. Other actions need some attention to move forward. So from my perspective, as I've listened and interacted with several of you, I believe there's a very beneficial overall objective to transform this unkept area into an amenity that we can be proud of. That will serve for the enjoyment of Round Lake residents and those in the surrounding area. I mean, I'm totally on board of wanting to be part of an effort to make a transformation here. Over the next 6 months, short-term objectives and actions that I've listed. Item one, we talked about before, securing the developed properties on the west of Park Road to concur with us being able to take the undeveloped vacated parcel and make into a public park. Item two, some further work to define, at least conceptually, what we want the end result to look like, to guide us in our efforts of path and trail and clearing development. I believe item three, we made a commitment at some point to have some type of public outreach. Certainly I encourage that. And a four, conceptual agreement with the park district as to the development of this 5.5 acres. And then from my perspective, the important question, who then will maintain whatever gets built. Item five, again, was done. Item six, I'll come back to the scheduling of us public work to open up this initial meandering path. Seven, I've talked with Trustee Uzi a couple of times as to visiting with those potential volunteer groups that can help us do the beyond the equipment intense clearing. if you will, from branching off on this graded path that we will do to do some debris removal, thinning of the undesirable vegetation. And then A being getting out of the organizing those volunteers to actually put forth and do some good. As to us clearing that now state meandering path, we have the equipment, roll-off waste containers and talk with waste management. Mark will also talk to them, see if we can get some consideration in their price to lessen our expenditure. My best judgment on labor is a four-person crew for five straight days. I don't have a solid feel for how fast this will go with Bobcat, if we have, with its bucket for grading, lifting debris, and taking it somewhere, and that somewhere to the clearing options, which has in fact on the time we spend for the labor needed. The best solution from a clearing standpoint would be option A. We remove everything and haul it away that we don't want, i.e. a contrast to that berm that I pointed out, soil. We probably would strip that filling in low spot. But the woody debris under option A would be removed and hauled away. Option B would be that which is closest to the alley of Park Road, and we would remove it all the way, but that which is closer to the way will become much more of a challenge in terms of bringing it back to a point of the motor. Option C would be picking areas along the path to where we could move the woody debris and do a little stockpile it for another day. That would be the least labor intense that with the desire to move forward and a real schedule for like late July, a four-person crew to go in and clear a nominally 6-foot wide meandering path. I listed on the volunteer effort the types of tasks that would be helpful for volunteers to help us with, and I believe within, let me say, layperson, limited equipment intensive, potentially no chainsaws by volunteer, potentially, that those volunteers could do with enough numbers and effort make a substantive difference in the first 6 months. So what did I say? I think there's a diamond in the rough there that's worth our effort to try and make something happen. How we make it happen is still a bit cloudy, and that's okay. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to at least present my thoughts as to what we do. And that'll be happy to answer the question.
Settled on a plan to secure the subdivision property owners' concerns. Yeah, I know we were talking about plans to get. You know, obviously we have to get the subdivision property owners to all agree we need 100% of their
say.
Yeah. Can we put any more effort into a budget plan?
The attorneys have started the ownership search.
We're going to work that out. I'll be right there.
spoke with Bryce Fawcett last week, and he asked that they send the paperwork to their office for them to sign off on everything that the family still owns that they didn't donate. That's a big portion of it. Also refreshed his memory that he had said he was willing to help with getting signatures from both people that he has contacts with as well.
So before we can really send any bills passed out on, we have to have those signatures.
Okay. Well, the lots themselves, there are no encumbrances on. The park lot out at the lake is the one that has the note and a portion of the right-of-way. So well over half of the property is not encumbered. But parts of it are, so that sufficiently answers your question.
Well, we can do general maintenance. That's not an issue. Cleaning, etc. But any major improvements that start to veer into the broad maintenance, no question to answer.
So the word after your cap is not an improvement?
Yeah, the word he's just accessing it, he's just creating the access to allow.
So already a community right down there.
But not big enough to get it more secure. He can't see back. He got the big hill in the way, the big ditches, logs across it, things like that. So that's the intent.
The portions are drainage wash areas that look more like a path. Some are critter trails and some are people trails.
I'm asking
them. We
have critters everywhere, whether you see them or not.
I don't want to see them.
I think for the residents in that area, Jim, the one meeting that you marked out, they didn't want to voice their opinions and concerns of the past. Due to the meeting being so lengthy that they weren't allowed that opportunity. And it was like some kind of something from the village, stating what the intents of where we're at and a chance to voice their concerns to the board.
That's my idea too. I mentioned that if we can get the underbrush cleared out sufficiently, that we can set up a robotic police station and maybe do an exercise with the Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts to do a surveying exercise with them, that we could shoot topo on them, maybe locate the larger trees, actually get a topography, a basic topographic survey through there, so we have more information to plan with, and then we'll give that to the park district to look at, plan again, and see if the original concept fits, and also get the feedback from the residents in the area at the same time. Part of it is we need, I think, Ron, you're looking at an access trail, widening out what's there now to be able to get the underbrush out to see what we have.
That's correct. So, Don, do you think, I mean, if we were to proceed with this work, would that be offensive to those folks, you think? If we're just trying to clear it out?
They're already offended. They didn't get what they're saying. But I think just some kind of notice or something that they could come to a meeting here and or talk about it if they want to come and talk. Otherwise, some of them said that because they don't know or they don't know, they don't want to volunteer. They just want to back out and volunteer. So until they get their say, I think you're going to have difficulty finding volunteers in the neighborhood.
Well, you need to light the tunnel so you can see where you're going first.
And I guess that means we'll need to be explained to them.
That's step one that Ron is proposing at this point. And then from there we'll be better able to envision what our goals are and adjust the goals as we go.
I think if we let them know what our plans are or how we're going to proceed, I think that'd be fine.
I know I, as a trustee, haven't seen this rendition until just now, so I'm concerned about those residents in particular. If there is a rendition, this should be going past them so that if they have any objections,
And I think, though, one of the things we determined at one of the meetings where they were here is that some of them are not part of the, they're not people that we need signatures from.
I think one of our biggest concerns is making a parking lot there at the end and having people come and park there in the intervention. I think they want to keep it more natural and walk up to it and into it. I think that's, but right now it was sold in the staging area to get the debris and stuff out. So a lot of them were very happy with the clearing that was done to see that to the window now. So most of them are pleased with that department.
Number one, we accepted the property donation to improve the parking for the benefit of the residents of the village. Everybody agreed on taking the donation. So that was step one. Part of that agreement was also that we develop a parking. So it's not that we should stop everything until we get feedback. And this is the basic step of trying to light the tunnel a little bit without a major impact at this point. So any conversation you have with residents, please try to explain it in those terms.
So
and invite them to come and give input at the meeting.
Yeah, so is it a matter of them getting them to just one of these board meetings, or is do we have to have
a board meeting? I don't know. I don't know. I didn't.
It's not committee at all, which I don't think.
Is there something that we can send to the residents in that area? Our proposed plan, what we want to do, or just what you told me now, something in writing that says what our intent is or what. Plan of attack, whatever. I think that would be, the communication with my consultant like that would be a huge help.
I'm happy to see the point of this if you serve the guy, you need some guidance.
And I think we have several people also say, well, let's get going, and then there's several that said, okay, we don't know what's happening yet, so let's stop the way.
Well, I don't want to stop the progress, but I certainly don't want to offend anyone along the way if we can avoid it. I just want to be sure that we're moving at a pace that works for everybody and puts everybody in the same on the same page.
I think, Jim, how you explained this just now, I think we put that in writing and gave that out to residents on our hands, whatever. I think it'll be a huge help.
I think one of my concerns is the amount of poison ivy vines that are out on the site. And the dry season has helped them from having so many juices right now. But when you get in there and start cutting it, this is not the prime time of the year to be playing it. So the late fall, winter season may be more appropriate for clearing that. So I guess it comes down to, do we want to jump in and do we have the time now for the crew to clear it, or would it be better to try to plant later in the season?
I've asked myself that question. And that work session, hopefully my next meeting in July, I want to focus on preventive maintenance and its magnitude of workload. Insertions are reality in public works, and I'm comfortable with that. People that I've got that are good equipment operators and I'm blessed in that regard, to include education management, could do this work in July or August. If there is a volunteer that truly will step forward, my mind tells me the sooner we get on with that effort feel either real good or feel disappointed, then we're in a better position to regroup for the early fall. And then regroup again for early spring. This one's not clear to me how many bumps in the road there's going to be other than pretty bumps in the road.
Right.
And the citizenry, I think, got their own competing objectives. They want safety and security, but they don't want the masses coming. Parking is a classical one. If we don't provide parking, if we make an attractive facility, vehicles will park on the road. That one does not have an easy answer either way in terms of that. Just like the safety, security. So, I encourage us to have some kind of gathering with them, with full recognition that there'll be concerns expressed, but I think it's to our advantage of hearing them and trying to make them feel like they're part of the solution.
Right.
So I know I didn't quite answer your question. It's more the wishes of the board if we want to start some physical transformation during the summer months. I can accommodate the effort that I propose. I do have real concerns of this becoming a public works only project. We will regret if we do that. Other things that are long overdue for attention, continually overdue for attention.
At this point, you're comfortable with the 5-day commitment? That's key number one.
So can we do both? Can we proceed with the planning in the 5 days and invite people in at the next meeting, just make a concerted effort to have people come in? And I think we have good answers for all the questions.
Yes.
Sure. I'll be sure from my perspective. Thank you.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah. So the option is to proceed with starting clearing, but also invite residents into our next meeting.
I'm going to say you're going to have a big backlash of people over there. You start without their input first.
We'll have time to talk about it.
The 18-inch storm sewer coming out of our pump station
I don't have any photos, although if there is question, they are on that platform. And there seems to be consensus at the moment, lighthearted comment by management advisor that was here last meeting, whom my wife, Bolina, did not do a good job defining the problem. There is a question, what's the problem we are trying to solve? So, problem we're trying to solve, put a manhole in the school ball field where the 18-inch storm sewer from our pump station and other collection points connects into a 36-inch that vividly showed how not to build a storm drain system last week. We need a manhole to clean the 3 out of the 18-inch and 36-inch, so we get the most conveyance we can out of that system at this critical part of the regional detention facility. So it's a project we can do in-house and want to do in-house. And board asked that I go get actual quotes for the material. I've done that. That is on the back page. And the low proposer bidder, this bowl of concrete on which were $1,423 to put all the material components we need delivered to the site. That's less than half of what I had previously estimated, and in part because I got help from others to simplify the number of components and the size for them. So in that case, I was pleased to be guided. I tried to get quotes from 4 different precast concrete manufacturers in this area, only received the 2. Why there's a substantive difference between Volmar and this concrete specialty, I don't know. But Volmar's been in business, so I'm told, for years and years, and they're a credible supplier, so no concern. We would stay with renting a sizable track hoe, as we need such to quickly do the excavation, but more importantly, lift and lower the pieces into place. I don't have that equipment. Our little back hoe will wind up in the ditch if we try to use it. I did chat with a gentleman that offered let us use his. This is too small also. Traco has size for what we need, $1,400, if we need it all 4 days. That's a conservative approach. Hopefully we can call Burris to come get it by day 3. That would save us about $300 and some. We have the equipment. We charge ourselves on paper for using our equipment. That actually is now the biggest ticket item, but that equipment is there to be used, not to sit in the shop. And we charge ourselves for our labor. You might argue that I'd be spending that money doing something. That's a fair argument, but I included that. So previously I said it was about $10,000. I'm at comfort saying on the high end we're about $8,900. But we definitely made an ample there, and I desire that we go forth and do this work while doing the last section. Mention the school principal come board to see this happen.
Okay. center? In maintenance, in general? I mean, we haven't had this particular project budget, but we had this amount of money budgeted for this type of work. I think, but I think it was only 1,400.
$3,000 is the fiscal year budget.
Oh, $3,000, okay.
And as I said last night, I think there's enough flexibility this early in the fiscal year that I can absorb this overage.
Okay.
I'm following the process of the department wanting to do this work themselves, and then you should say you find a way to absorb as well. It seems like a win-win for all.
Yeah, it's work you had to do. So, good job, man. I think it's on it.
Okay, we have a consensus, and we move to the next board meeting for approval.
Yes.
Can I proceed to the order of the hearing?
Everybody okay with that?
Yes.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Trustee Newby needs to leave shortly, so I guess if we could do the video gaming discussion, so he would be present for that.
I'm going to do what I please hand it out. All right. We've really received a request to make video gaming. We originally thought that the code did allow for it, and then it does exempt all state approved gambling. Better term, it says that they're exempt from criminal access for gaming. However, after legal review and other questions by the public, it was recommended that we in fact change our code to allow for the video game. That I said, we received a request from Mr. Coins to allow it. Steve and I did a lot of research on the issue, and it really summed up in a nutshell here the impact of our lake. If there were an establishment that would come in, it would essentially be an establishment that would serve alcohol. It could be a restaurant, it could be a bar, but they had to serve alcohol and consume it on the premises. They can't be closer than 100 feet from, in our case, it would be a church. There are other considerations that don't apply to our lakes. For example, we don't have a horse track. We don't have other places that allow for off-track betting, what I'm trying to think of. Those are other restrictions the state statute for that obviously don't apply here. The other restriction that essentially applied to them is that they have an area that is roped off, for lack of a better term. It has to be isolated for only people 21 and over allowed to enter, unless the entire establishment is 21 and over, then they don't have to do that. But that, it has to be some, it could be a rope, it could be a fence, it could be a separate room, but that has to be in kind of the view of the licensee or the license establishment. The terminal is essentially operated by somebody else, and the license establishment, which in our case would be a restaurant or a bar, would then set up a contract with one of the approved video gaming vendors that are registered with the state. And there's obviously licensing fees, but we don't receive any of that. That's all done by the gaming board, and we don't have any purview over that. Really, the only question that you need to answer and address is if you wanted to change the code to permit the video game. We included, or video game, as they say, we included some information. If you look at the very end, I put a lot of frequently asked questions that's straight from the Illinois Gaming Board. But the video game revenues as you see is our estimate. It shows the percentages on the spreadsheet. So if you get a machine that's playing $250,000 a year, what our portion, the municipality could realize approximately $2,300 of that entire amount of play on a per-sheet basis. That's 1% of the total play, 5% of what is essentially the net gaming revenue, which is the total amount of money put in the machine, payouts to individuals playing, and then that's the net gaming income. Some of that goes to the state. Some of it goes to the village, as I said, and then the remaining portions go equally to the operator of the terminal and the licensed establishment, which would, in our case, would be the restaurant or bar. There's also a limit of $25 on the fee that we could charge, that we would be able to charge for licensing the machines in town. Basically, that's just, you know, registration, not a license, maybe some registration of the machines, so you know who has them and you know where they are. So the police know where they're at, where they are also. That's $10,000. I couldn't make it much simpler than that, but obviously we can answer any questions.
So if one of the police guys allow it, we can't pick and choose who gets it and doesn't. Once we do it for one, we do it for all, right? But then as long as they follow the rules of the location.
Yeah, assuming they meet all the state regulations, you get your licensing with terminals. That's basically you'd be permitted, and then you license the terminals. That's the extent of our role, other than enforcement down the road, make sure the area broke off, you know, some things of that nature.
Is that limited to how much machines they can have?
It's 5 per establishment.
Okay.
Without further analysis, I don't believe that anybody's closer than 100 feet to a church. I have to get the number of liquor licenses that we have to determine the total number. But it's 5 per establishment, regardless. So if we have 20, that's
unlimited establishment, obviously.
Pardon me?
Unlimited establishment?
No, only those certain liquors. So if we have 20.
Right, one that serves for all of them down if they chose to.
That's correct.
Does this apply to the liquor stores?
No, it has to be consumed on premises. So if we have 20 restaurants, slash bars, both the combination, that would be max possible on our machines. If there's 20 licenses. But they all want 5. I take that back. There's one place they did. There is one, rents on the waiver would not be permitted. Video gaming is there within 100 feet of the community church. Sorry, I'm not going to put that aside. There's the only one that I'm aware of that's inside of 100 feet from the location.
Help us to understand that.
We have to revise that further, but I preliminary, I checked that. What do we see, Mike? 116 feet is where they're at right now.
No.
That's corner to corner.
That's the state rules, that's not our rule.
That's correct. That's the instruction. And I legal revised to provide a copy of the revised ordinance today, suggested for your review. What that does is revise our code to specifically talk about video gaming. I'd also add that there is, we also need to revise another portion of our code, business licensing portion, because that's kind of redundant to vending machines, so we need to remove the video gaming from that portion. We license vending machines except for jukebox at $35, so we're going to take, if you choose to, we would take the video gaming machines out of that portion of the code, but that's just essentially clean up. You would still have to approve that to the code.
Sure. Can you give your name and address?
I'm Scott, in four counties. I'm Fort Wright, I've been in this for 22 years. I'm here to request that the Romney revise or adjust the Romney, ordinance, not a video game. Like I said, I've been in business for 22 years. Business in Romney County isn't what it used to be in our business. But I think that it would benefit the village by bringing people from out of the area to come play and look at ours. The revenue for the village is 5%, which if you stated, if you spend $1,000 or you have $1,000 left over, then 5% of that would go directly to the village. At the present time, we have going a lot of in every establishment in Romney, which is essentially gambling. There is an ordinance against that, and there's nobody to stop anybody from. I don't know what the difference would be between putting a $20 bill or a $5 bill into a lottery ticket versus a gaming ticket. So you get the village would get a direct, impact from somebody playing video gambling versus when they don't get a direct impact from the lottery. I'm not a real good public speaker, so you got to figure that out already. Like I said, I'm here to ask, for permission from the village to do what a lot of other villages have already done, and they're looking at, a time frame, I guess, December?
August 1st,
possibly, if the items are approved. I know your concerns about some establishments maybe getting these machines or whatever, but the gaming board has some really strict rules. I mean, you have to disclose your taxes, you have to disclose your criminal history, you have to disclose your you have to put your kids down there, you have to put your family. If anybody who is possibly, shady in any way, it's all a discretionary thing by the state to receive a gaming license to participate in it. So I think the village's concern, possibly would be alleviated by that. If you do receive a video gaming license, that you have been thoroughly checked out from top to bottom, there should be no issues. And one here, maybe he could help you out with some of your questions. Actually, I know he's got something to say, so. Yeah, Don, you're...
I didn't really come here to speak, but I volunteered at a number of village meetings. My name is Glenn Hunter, and I'm here on behalf of Gold Rush Amusements. And I've been able to attend a number of village board meetings and answer questions for a lot of people. I've met with some village attorneys on a number of occasions to speak with trustees who wanted some questions answered from a terminal operator's perspective. Terminal operator is defined in the Act as the entity that will own the machines essentially and put those in the bars and engage in contract with the tavern or the restaurant or with the pouring establishment. So if you had any questions from a terminal operator perspective, I've gone over the law a number of times and I've been well versed for the last several months of this. From personally, my background is 26 years in law enforcement, Illinois State Police as a commander of investigation. Retired from state police. I was the chief of police for a small town and I've been head of an investigation division of a big firm in Chicago for the last few years. Also an attorney in private practice for the last 12 years. So I was asked by this terminal operator to come on board with him to assist him in his compliance and making sure he's up in line with the gaming board rules and in line with the Act and the adopted rules. I also spent 3 years at the gaming board in charge of enforcement of the rules. So if you have any questions for me, I can only give you some clarification on some of the issues surrounding.
I guess, are there any problems that you perceive that need to be addressed?
Well, one of my main concerns is the under 21 aspect of it when it comes to establishments where there are restaurants that have a pouring license and they have a separate bar or a separate area where they're separate from the tables of the restaurants, and they allow children or families to come in. And my concern is keeping in compliance with the law and the act. And as I stated earlier, those type of places have to have a segregated area. And what we're encouraging people to do with those type of places is either have an area that is cordoned off with a half wall, something that is clearly designated and marked as an over 21 area only. And Mr. Coyne's establishment, I believe, is an only that's I believe it's a tavern where there's only 21 and over, so that wouldn't be a concern. If it was a restaurant, the law says, or the act says, that it just has to be a segregated area. It doesn't define segregated. Segregated could mean something as little as a line on the floor, or a stanchion with a velvet rope, or a brass rail. The establishments we have contracts with, we're encouraging them to go the extra mile. You can take that extra step and build a half wall, segregate that area so that it's clearly defined as 21 and over, and it's within the view of the bartender. So those are my concerns. And what I've told a couple of chiefs that I've known, is if they have concerns in town about teenagers being coming in there, or if they wanted to work with us, and I voluntarily agreed to work with a number of chiefs if they wanted to work a sting operation, or want to send some youth in there, that would definitely jeopardize our license. It would jeopardize the establishment's license. So it's in our best interest, and it's in the establishment's best interest to keep the under 21 out of there, because they're going to get fined if they have kids coming in there and playing the machines. So that's why they have to be in view of the bar, and that's why we want to have a very strong and segregated area. I can't speak on behalf of any other terminal operators. Right now, there are statewide, I believe there are 66 terminal operators that are licensed to distribute or place the machines, but that's statewide. There are a number around the five-county area around Chicago.
And basically, if we approve an ordinance allowing it, then we don't have any say in the separation. That's up to State Gaming Board to have oversight on that.
Right, Gaming Board and oversight. But it doesn't prohibit local law enforcement from going in there and making observations, just like they can make an observation in a tavern and check people's ID for going in there.
But as far as the type of separation, like you said, that would be the state.
Right, and after establishment applied for a license, they apply with the Gaming Board. The Gaming Board would check their background and their history. They would check with a local liquor license. They would check with the local police. They would check with your board. They would check with the state liquor license, make sure there are no infractions. Then the Gaming Board would come out and send a couple of agents out to look at the bar, determine what they believe would be the best venue inside the bar or the restaurant. And they would ask the bar owner what steps they're going to take. As part of their inspection, they'll ask the bar owner, and they'll probably be with us and say, what steps do you plan to take to segregate this area? And then we'll explain what we plan to do. And like I said, we're encouraging our bar owners to take that extra step.
Right now, I think the village we could opt out to a video game if we chose to at this point, right? But if we chose to opt out not to do the video gaming, and wouldn't we be kind of like later and try to change our mind about it? Or something in that state up to
if you chose to assertively opt out, for those villages who don't have an old ordinance on the books, if they don't have an ordinance back from 1968 or 75 that says no gambling or other crimes and vices to come, you're essentially opted in by the state law from 2009. So you have to assert yourself and opt out and write an ordinance to opt out. That doesn't prohibit you from opting back in a month or 6 months later if you view other towns around you. If you see that business is leaving this town to go to the neighboring village or to Lakemore or to Fox Lake or someplace to go in those parts, I think your business is here would say, this is hurting our business because they've gone across the border into that place.
I thought the penalty for that on the percentage of the dollars of the village would get if we opted out now and then opted back in later.
From the state law?
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't get, if you were opted out, you wouldn't be getting that 5%.
Right, but right now we get 5%. If we do it, we get 5% now. I was sort of told that if we opted out and didn't do it, and we wanted to make it, we would get 5%, we make it 3%.
No, that's not. I was Chris. Explain, I'm also a licensed operator in the state of Illinois. That is not true. You would get your 5% now, that later, 5 years from now, next month, it wouldn't make any difference.
Well, then there's some discussion initially for communities that opted out that the state wanted to impose some kind of a tax.
There was talk of it.
Lost revenue.
Yeah, there was talk, but in that regard,
that's probably right
there in line.
First, and I'm making it correct, I believe there's, was passed under the roads project?
It's actually, it's works project.
Yeah, works capital.
It's a capital bill that has passed.
And the third communities that I've got are, I believe, will not receive funding from the state for, from that project, or from that fund, for local,
local
road construction projects.
If you're not
part of the program, then you can't receive any benefit from the program. So, I mean, there is benefits besides the 5%. There's state money there that, you know, may help improve long-length roads.
Potential benefit.
Potential. Well, there's an immediate benefit of the 5%. So, right. There's no guarantee that they're going to come to Round Lake and start fixing the road, right?
And there are towns directly in Black Lake is in. Lakeville is in. Antioch is discussing it.
Apparently opted out.
The county is out.
The unincorporated area. The county opts out and the unincorporated areas are out. But Fox Lake is in, Lake Moore is in.
And Johnsburg is in, McKinley is in. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but there's some out Liberty Hill is out. And we found out there's a ton out because of the old laws that are on the books. I mean, originally there was only, there was less than 100 that were opted out when we thought everybody had to opt out. But when the gaming board took the stance that if it's on your books of no gaming, you can get out of town, that took the number and, you know, multiplied it by 10 overnight. There's still towns that we don't know if they're in or out because nobody's gone through their books yet.
Sure.
So, you know, we don't know how many are.
Right. One of the ways they're finding out is if I'm sorry.
I spoke to you, Mr. Mayor. You expressed the concern that, you know, possibly the gambling takes money out of the pockets that need it the most and, you know, spend it the most. And, you know. I know as far as my client base is, I have an older client base. They have an expendable income. They can't spend, you know, like kids, but I don't have a lot of kids in my car, but they can't spend a lot of money on drinks because they have their two or three drinks in their lunch and, but they do travel to the Slings, and they travel to Milwaukee, and they travel to Chicago, and they travel to Michigan, to Michigan City, Indiana. And I think they could spend more time locally if they could do some of the, you know, things that they enjoy doing. And gambling is one of them. I mean, Lake Bowl now has scratch-off lottery tickets. Mamela's has scratch-off lottery tickets. Every gas station in the community and liquor store has scratch-off lottery tickets. You know, and I guess my emphasis is that the one vice versus the other, one that the village would see a direct benefit from, and the other one goes into that state fund that we, you know, I don't know what
you're where it is.
Huh?
That we wonder where it is.
Exactly. You don't know if you see any of it.
And there is a part of our bill that does go to help property gamblers. There, it is set up in our fee structure that the operators, the manufacturers, and the borrowers say go help property gamblers. And there is not such a thing in the law. It doesn't exist.
Other question?
I'm there. I'm going to call it moving forward.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the board, we have
First one is a resolution adopting the civil resource officer intergovernmental agreement between Village and Board of Education for the Miami area schools. Essentially, this is the exact same agreement that we had with the school district of the previous school year. This one would go into the school year for 2010 or 2012 or 2013. It provides for one officer to work in the school while school is in session, and in return, the school district would pay the cost for that officer while that officer was in the school. We ask that we move this on forward.
Why does it go through July 31st?
The payment to both officers.
Yeah. We don't have an officer there June and July. It's just
a part of June.
All right.
That's just our physical.
Everybody okay with moving this forward?
The next agenda item summary is our Lake County Metropolitan Enforcement Group invoice. The annual invoice for our intergovernmental agreement with MEG. This is the agency that helps us with predominantly drugs and gang and weapons work. They do a heavy duty undercover type work that we're not able to do. The invoice that asks for a contribution of $600 per sworn officer for a total of $12,600. Frankly, we can't do the work that they do. They're not equipped. Everybody knows our police officers. We do not get anywhere doing these functions. We don't have the ability. So I'm asking that we move this one forward as well. The final agenda item somewhere is for our morning cyber maintenance. Village owns 8 warning sirens that the village uses for civil and weather emergencies. During some work leading up to narrowbanding, we found some repairs that are necessary for these towers that we weren't aware of until they started getting into working on narrowbanding. And what that work involves is replacing 18 batteries that have worn out that have mold found, and 6 speaker drivers that are the amplifiers that make the loud noise in each of the speakers. And of those 8 towers, 18 batteries have failed, 6 drivers. We've gotten 2 quotes from 2 different companies, and one is higher than the other. And what we're asking is that you would approve this expense to go to JS Communications for the battery replacement, Radcom, to complete the speaker drivers. And that breakdown would be the JS Communications for $3,319 and Radcom for $3,324.
Not at all. Okay, Radcom is $6,000 for the speaker drivers.
Oh, he's not.
Yeah, that's right. They were just side by side comparison. JS Communications will do the batteries at 3319. Radcom will do the speaker at the $6,413.
Oh, I'm sorry. These were not budgeted, but we didn't know that they were bad. Because you could still hear the sirens go. It wasn't something that you could tell by being on the ground. You have to be in the mechanisms where these components down.
What's the tagline on Radcom? Void replacing
all the radio, has got a separate quote for that part of the speaker drive?
No, that's a separate issue. That's what the chief was referring to regarding the narrowbanding. Radicom believes the radios need to be replaced. JS says the radios do not need to be replaced. So, as the chief was saying, while we were doing this look, because of the repair issues and got deeper into it and looked at the batteries and the drivers, Radicom says, you got to replace all your radios in order to be narrowband compliant. So we're going to look at, we're continuing to keep up with that issue, but CENTCOM's not ready for narrowbanding yet. So as soon as CENTCOM does their narrowbanding, we're going to feedback that look, and then we'll be able to verify if our radios are in fact narrowband compliant or if we have to do a purchase to have those replaced. We don't believe that that's the case, but that's the tagline with respect to the number nine. Yes, sir.
Does anybody need to explain what narrowbanding is? Does that help?
Sure.
If you remember with your television, the government told you you had to get a bigger box for your TV. What that did was it took the analog signal that took up this much space in your radio and brought it down for a TV and brought it down to a very small thin line. That's what narrow banding is for all the radios that are in use today. That transmit, it brings it down to a digital signal that's more briefly defined. And that's how these towers work. CENTCOM pushes the button and sends a radio signal to a radio receiver in these towers that triggers everything.
Server purchase is the last thing.
Simply, you know, as part of our computer replacement plan, we have servers listed, we have all the computers listed. Well, this year, the way the budget stands, we had the police server program for replacement. However, our IT consultants and current technology said that they've seen some failures on the public works server that are indicative of the fact that things get ready to come. So they recommended that we swap the replacement. Both servers were purchased at the same time. One was 5 years and one was six, but originally it was a police server. 5 years in this year and 6 years of replacement just to spread out the cost. But we got a proposal from Current. We also asked CSI, Rex Lumen CSI, which is the name of our system, but they weren't able to provide a proposal on the servers, so what we have is a cost to replace the servers from current technologies. The hardware at $5,443.37 and the labor at $2,652. Even though this shows that we're under budget, just because of the way things are, we went into year to encumber, we did not program the labor for some reason into the budget. We have the labor cost on the IT program, on our,
we have the labor cost and the funding of the replacement plan, the contribution to those funds that we then included in the expense side.
When are you going to budget? So, yeah, so we got, you know, it's part of the computer placement, but we didn't fund that, so when we, when it does come down to, when there's also six computers for police, and there was two computers scheduled for public works, but they really only need one. We don't know why how two got in there either, but we really need one. So we're going to get close when it comes to what we actually programmed and budgeted versus what we really need to do. But we do have six more computers replaced. If we get good numbers on those and we get the good numbers on the one public works, obviously we don't need two, we only need one, we should be really close on the total cost. But I just wanted you to be aware that that 2652 was not programmed in the budget. We only had the $6,948, as you see in the middle column on the agenda item. So the total request is $8,100. When we've been programming $10,000 or $11,000 for network servers. In the, as Steve said, from the depreciation funding perspective. So we'd like to approve the rule forward to approve the current technologies proposal.
Was that $12,000 each or $42,000
each?
So we're under the cap.
We're under, yeah, what we assume for funding, even though it didn't get in the budget.
Any objections? Your topics? None? Executive session? Motion to adjourn?
Second.
Mandeville, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries.